Always expect something good on your lunch hour. Connecting faith with life.
Hi, welcome back to Connecting Faith. Glad to have you on today with us. If you're a regular listener, we appreciate you just tuning in each day. And if you're new to Faith Radio, I want to say welcome. Find out more about us if you're listening in the Twin Cities area, Minneapolis-St. Paul area. You may have discovered us on the FM band at 90.7, translator carrying our signal, so we're excited about that. So if you're in the area and flip over to FM at 90.7, love to just get a little report, status report, and how it's coming through. Excited to expand the range a little bit here in Twin Cities. I'm Neil Stavem, and Ted Ross at the controls today, and we're in the week of Valentine's, and think we got a pretty good topic today because it's sort of all about love and romance. And Ted, our topic today is on one primary thing:
marriage. Marriage is what brings us together today. Marriage, that blessed arrangement, that dream within a dream.
Oh man. It's just,
yeah, you know, can't go wrong with Princess Bride.
You know, I'm thinking that maybe our guest today would just like to kind of quote a few of her favorite lines, and we'll just kind of go back and forth. We'll make it a Princess Bride hour.
There you go.
we're going to talk about Get Married. In fact, that's the title of a great book from Candace Waters, who's been a guest in the past. The subtitle is What Women Can Do to Help It Happen, and Candace, along with her husband Steve, founded Boundless.org, a webzine for folks in the family back in the late 90s. Candace served as the Boundless editor for a number of years, and she's a freelance writer and editor. She's author of the book Get Married, we're going to focus on. Together they wrote Start Your Family, Inspiration for Having Babies. We've got some copies, actually, of both books we can give away. And her and Steve and the family live in Louisville, Kentucky, and we are just glad to have her back with us today on Connecting Faith. Will you be watching Princess Bride sometime this week, Candace?
Probably not.
Okay, all right.
Our kids are not the right ages yet. You know, when they're little, they can watch it, and then they get to be a certain age, you're like, oh, not yet.
Yeah, okay. Well, we'll kind of skip the Princess Bride comments from now, but good to have you back to Connecting Faith. We always enjoy our conversation, and this topic of that, just as we lead up to Valentine's Day, a lot about, you know, love and romance, and, you know, get the cards and the flowers and say, be mine, and I want to focus for those who maybe aren't getting those be mine little hearts and wondering, all right, what can I do something different? You wrote a really wonderful book that addresses that. Is it okay to want to be married? And is there anything a woman who has never been married can do to make marriage more likely? And so we're going to jump into that. But Candace, I do want to maybe just start with, you know, the whole idea of marriage. It does seem to be kind of up for debate these days. And I was just thinking that, you know, if it can mean anything, then maybe it ends up meaning nothing. So what's your assessment maybe of the marriage climate today?
Well, marriage climate is hostile culture-wide. You're absolutely right. If it can mean anything, it can mean nothing. And I think that's a lot of what's driving the political agenda, at least. But speaking to Christian women, and hopefully some Christian men listening in too, within the church, we need to be the people of the book that say, look, we know where marriage came from. God gave us marriage. It was his idea in the beginning. It wasn't instituted by a government anywhere. It wasn't, you know, the bright idea of some guy who saw some girl and thought, hey, we should hook up for the rest of our lives. This was a divine and divinely inspired and divinely instituted within our very nature. And it was given to us for our good and for our flourishing and for God's glory. And so we tamper really at our own peril. And I think, unfortunately, we're already seeing so much of the shrapnel that comes from trying to tinker with God's design. There's a lot of relational baggage and just relational hurting out there. And you know, one of the most basic things that I think is the fallout is this delay. You have so many Christian single women who say, I would love to be married. And they look around and they say, I just don't see any Christian men that are equally interested. I think that is just a symptom of the marriage culture we're living in. There is not a strong ought in our culture, and there's not a strong ought in our churches insofar as older men say to younger men, son, you ought to find a wife. You would you would grow in exponential ways, and you would be embracing what God said is good. You know, God said it's not good for man to be alone. Well, we need more pastors that say that to the 20-something guys in their church. It's not good for you to be alone.
Yeah, you know, before we kind of dive into that, I was thinking, too, there's, you know, back in Minnesota, at least where we're headquartered here, there was a big campaign, of course, for same-sex marriage, and a lot of bumper stickers had to do with love, and that was, you know, all the commercial. Well, if you love someone, isn't that's really enough? That's all that really matters. And, of course, we're in this season of romance and love, so is that the primary reason to marry?
Well, you know, I think people who are married understand that you take a vow before God to get married because you know that the feelings won't last. You absolutely don't stay married because you feel a certain way, because your feelings are so fickle. And so the whole essence of marriage is covenant, and the whole notion of covenant is I bind myself to you forever regardless of how I feel on any given day. And so love is great. But we have to stop and say, what do you mean by love? And if all you are talking about is how you feel, you can't help but fall in and out of love. And if that's the basis of your relationship, it's going to be a very transitory relationship.
The book we're referencing is called Get Married, What Women Can Do to Help It Happen. It's written by our guest today, Candace Waters. And Candace, as you alluded to, that this delay issue is one of the big, you know, concerns. Has a woman wanting to get married been? I mean, has this been an issue for generations, though, or is this just something sort of current and new that 50, 100 yeah. years ago it wasn't an issue?
Well, you know, yes and no. There have been periods in history where there are delays. Certainly when you have a World War II generation, there was a period of time where people were delaying marriage because the soldiers were off fighting. I think what we have now in history is atypical in that people are delaying marriage such that the number of people who will eventually marry is going down. So in the past, when you had delays, the rates eventually caught back up. But you're seeing people who are delaying and then deciding I'm not going to marry, and a lot of them are choosing instead to cohabit. They're living together. They're saying this is a better trial run for marriage than marriage. You know, we don't want to make the same mistakes our divorced parents made, so we're going to try to have this test run. And unfortunately, statistics bear out, and I think Scripture would certainly affirm, that trying to recreate marriage in our own image and say we're going to live together first, actually it's better practice for divorce than it is for the covenant and commitments that marriage requires, because you go into it knowing we have a back door. If this doesn't work out, we'll end it. And that's the whole point of trying it out ahead of time. But again, that's practice. That mindset is the same mindset of divorce that says, well, we'll get married, and then when we stop liking each other, we'll call it quits.
Well, let's pick up on that, so that the test drive idea, because in your book, you address that. An article from Pastor Michael Lawrence talks about stop test driving your girlfriend, but obviously it works for, you know, men and women. But there was an interesting sort of point that he had about why that's not a good idea. Let's expand on that. Why not?
Yeah, and you could say to the women, stop letting your boyfriend test drive you. The point is that when you date someone seriously, and when you, especially when you date in such a way that you're kind of acting married, that can be physical. That could also be, though, just emotional and spiritual, a level of intimacy that really is reserved for marriage. But when you act that way in dating, you're putting wear and tear on each other's heart. From a woman's perspective, it kind of takes you out of the market, so to speak, if you'll forgive the metaphor there. But if you're with a guy and he is dating you, but he sees it as sort of a test drive, nobody else is going to ask you out. His buddies aren't going to see you as available. And so you're basically his during the time you're dating. And if he doesn't have marriage as his goal, he is really defrauding you, because he is putting wear and tear on your heart. He's occupying your affections and your time. And this may be during your prime time to find a mate. And so it's a really risky way for Christians to date if their goal is marriage.
I thought, too, there was an interesting perspective in that, you know, the question becomes, you know, how do I know if he or she is the one for me? And it suddenly turns about us. It becomes all self-centered, doesn't it?
That's so true, and we live in such a hyper-materialistic culture. We are so used to being able to shop an infinite number of options. You know, you go to Amazon, and there are millions of products available for you at your fingertips, and you can go to Frugal and cost compare and price check and, you know, check out consumer reports. And this materialistic mindset, this consumer mindset, really can affect how we relate to other people. And we see it in dating. I think one of the worst examples of that can be seen on certain online dating sites. It's not always the case, but you can't help but have a little bit of a shopper mentality when your email is, you know, filling up with potential matches. You're going through and trying to figure out, okay, what about him? Okay, check, he's good, he's good. Nah, he's not great. You know, it's kind of like squeezing the fruit at the produce aisle in the market. People aren't produce. And we really hurt our prospects for serious committed relationships that have the potential to go to the distance to marriage when we bring our consumer mindset and our shopper mindset to dating.
All right. Well, in a moment, we'll come back and talk more about that. How do we not be consumers when it comes to dating and pursuing marriage? And we're going to just say it's a good thing. It's okay to be to want to be married. And we're going to give some great advice, practical biblical insights today from Candace Waters, who is author of this great resource called Get Married, What Women Can Do to Help It Happen. And we've got half a dozen copies of the book to give away and love to put one in your hands. Be a great resource for you and find some practical, helpful advice. You can sign up. We'll do the drawing as we do at the end of the hour at 877-93-FAITH. The way you get your name in for that, 877-933-2484. But you might have a question as it relates to being marriageable and just maybe in that process. You know, are there enough good men around? Pulling a Ruth, we'll talk a little bit about that, praying boldly, all those kinds of things. You have some questions on that subject to join in today at 877-93-FAITH. More in a minute.
When someone dries your tears, when someone wins your heart and says you're
talking about marriage today, especially if you're not in that relationship, but you would like to be. Some practical help today. It's called Get Married. That's the title of the book, What Women Can Do to Help It Happen. And we're saying, Candace Waters has written it, and we're saying, you know, it's all right. Candace is giving women permission to want Christian marriage, to encourage them to believe it's possible, and supply the tools to get there, despite our post-marriage culture. And I'm getting some good advice. Candace, we talked a little bit just before the break about, you know, that there's this delay going on. There's been a push among some that we should get married younger. Is that a good idea, early marriage?
I guess it depends on what you mean by early. The stats on marriage before 20 aren't great. So marriages that are begun in the teens have a higher possibility of divorce or higher likelihood. But I think, yes, getting married in your early 20s to mid-20s is smart. It's smart for a couple of reasons. One of the most obvious is that you're most fertile. A woman is most fertile in her early 20s. And I think we've been a little bit duped by a Hollywood culture that has babies later and later because of the artificial reproductive technologies that they can take advantage of that are super expensive and often risky from a health perspective, and don't have great success rates. But we think, well, you know, I'll just keep pushing pause on my biological clock and focus on my career. And you see the career years overlapping your fertility years, but you don't have a lot of people in your life saying, I mean, you realize that if you want to have kids someday, you shouldn't spend so much time at the office. You need to at least invest with as much intentionality in your relationships and, you know, looking for a husband as you do looking for a job. So I'm a fan of early marriage, but I think you can't say early marriage at all costs and neglect maturity and ability to you know, support yourselves. And but I have no problem with a couple that's still in college saying, hey, we're thinking of getting married, sitting down with them and saying, that is wonderful. Tell us why and tell us what your plan is.
In fact, I know in the book you talk about several instances where older couples kind of helped you and your husband, Steve, just kind of work through some of those conversations, and those are recommended. We'll talk maybe more about that in a moment. But we've kind of moved around an issue, say, well, there aren't any good men available. Let's talk about that. I mean, there's a new report out here just this last week that new research says you should settle for, settling for a Mr. Right now is better than waiting for Mr. Right.
Yeah, and I suspect that was written by an unbeliever. So again, talking to a believing woman, when they come and they say, you know, there aren't any good men around, I always stop and say, okay, is God sovereign over your life? And, you know, if they're biblical women, they say, yes, of course he is. They say, okay, well, where does he have you right now? And who are the men that are in your life right now? And often just slowing down and reassessing who God has placed in their lives can help them even think through again the guys about whom they would say, oh, we're just friends. And I say, well, that's a great place to start for potential marriage. Friendship is such a wonderful foundation for marriage, and I think we can be quick to write off men who have wonderful future husband potential because they might not measure up to certain traits or characteristics that, you know, we have on our checklist, our kind of subconscious checklist, and maybe they don't fit the image that the culture around you or your parents or whoever, maybe, you know, the picture that you had growing up. But if they measure up on what's most important in terms of their character, their ability to support a family, their willingness to lead in as a servant, their Christian maturity, and then let's say they're maybe shorter than you or bald or a little older than you thought they would be or even a little younger than you thought, you know, maybe a couple years younger than you are. That's why I say, well, I think it's worth praying about your expectations and make sure your expectations line up with what a good husband is and what a good husband would look like. And that you're having realistic expectations and biblical expectations. Often there are candidates for marriage that women overlook, and so that's a good starting point.
Well, you know, we do have expectations, but we probably know ultimately that we can only change ourselves. So, should a girl marry someone who's sort of delayed, prolonged adolescent in hope of, you know, helping him mature and grow up?
No, I don't think that's a good idea. I would not encourage a woman to marry someone stuck in the boy mode. I would encourage a woman who saw that he might have some potential to encourage him to spend a whole lot of time with older godly men to grow up first and then see where that might go. But no, that's a really dangerous situation to be dating someone who is significantly more immature than you are. And who has no interest in growing up because, you know, and I know that the challenges of marriage are such that you have to be at least capable of taking them on. You might, you know, you're not going to marry a fully mature man at 21. You know, I like to say when John Piper got married, you know, he wasn't John Piper yet. He was just Johnny or whatever. I mean, none of the men we look up to as incredible leaders at age 50 and 60 and 70 were like that when they were 21. And so you have to ask not, hey, is he just like my dad or is he just like my pastor, but is he a man with the desire and the aptitude to grow in godliness? And does he have evidence of the spiritual disciplines and of character that is growing? And is he capable of maturing? And are the people that I trust affirming that we would be a good match? And are we better together for the kingdom than we are apart? These are the sorts of things you have to do to see, is there the aptitude? You know, what is his trajectory when you kind of project where he is now and where he might be in 10 and 15 and 20 years? What kind of a line is he walking? And I think you can get a lot of information when you start to ask the question that way.
Some of us, you know, probably as guys, maybe, you know, as if we're in our 20s, we're not in our 50s. I mean, we don't necessarily know maybe what our aptitudes are. And you address one of the chapters is about awaking the sleeper. Talk a little bit about how a woman can maybe help her potential mate dream a bit.
Yeah, one of the most wonderful things a woman can realize is that God did make her a helper. That's part of her DNA. She's wired to help. And women, we have this ability to nurture a man in a good direction. And I like to point out two women in the Bible that are examples. One is Abigail, who appealed to David as a king when he wasn't yet king, and he was about to go on a murderous rampage and kill her husband and all the men of her household. She appealed to him as a king and urged him not to do this thing that the Lord would hate. And you compare her to Michal, who was David's wife, who just despised him and thought he was an idiot for dancing before the Lord, and she cursed him. And the Lord cursed her with lifelong barrenness. I want to be like Abigail, and I want the young women I mentor to be like Abigail with the men in their lives, to relate to them as sons of the king. You know, if they are believers, to encourage them in godliness, in maturity, to use all of their womanly abilities to nurture towards godliness and towards maturity, and, you know, asking good questions. Part of waking a great sleeper is asking good questions like, if you could do anything, what would you do? If, you know, if money weren't an object, what business would you start? Or what trip would you take? What missions goal would you set for your life? And just give him opportunity to dream, and then listen. Don't be quick to go, oh, well, that's crazy, or, you know, well, that's never going to happen. No, say, wow, that's really interesting. I mean, assuming it is interesting, why is that so important to you? And, you know, what steps might you take to get there? And just encourage his God-given need to lead.
Men want to do that, right? But they sort of don't have to in today's culture in many ways.
That's absolutely right. There's very little outward pressure on them to do hard things, to borrow a phrase from another author, and especially for the kingdom. But here's the thing. Men are, in the same way women are designed to help and it comes naturally to them, men are designed to provide for and protect. The question is not, will he provide and protect? It's who will he provide for? Whom will he be protecting? Many, many of the young men that are in our culture today are providing for themselves. They're protecting themselves. They're using their strength to get for themselves. And in some cases, they're using their strength in a way that is hurtful to other people. And so this is where it's so important to encourage, you know, single women, encourage your single Christian male friends to be using their provider-protector tendencies to help others. And I think it's really helpful in a church setting where the singles are encouraging one another in a godly way as friends, even before they get to the dating question, that you can be encouraging your male friends to take risks, to step up and lead. And rather than giving into the temptation to belittle the ones that don't and to, you know, kind of have a off-to-the-side hate fest among your girlfriends about the guys who are lame, I think that is really not helpful. Instead, recognize God is calling them to so much, and that's why they need a helper. And as a culture within your singles group, be an encouraging group of young women that encourage the men. You know, if you see any evidence of leadership, praise him for that. Not falsely, not over the top, but just say, wow, you know, really appreciate it when you lead with a servant heart or you know, any of the number of things that you would see.
Great insight, as always, from Candace Waters. Glad to have her back with us here on Connecting Faith. We're talking about her book, Get Married, What Women Can Do to Help It Happen. We've got some copies to give away and would love to put one in your hands. You can give us a call. Sign up for the drawing, 877-93-FAITH. It's 877-933-2484. Candace founded Boundless.org, webzine for folks in the family, and served as its editor for a number of years as a freelance writer and as a mom and a wife. We're going to talk more with Candace in a moment. Love to have you join the conversation as well. It's 877-933-2484. We're at 32 past the hour and heading into Valentine's Day with some thoughts about getting married and referencing a great book from Candace Waters, who's a freelance writer and editor, and she was the founder of Boundless.org, a webzine for folks in the family, and served as the editor for a number of years. Her and her husband, Steve, have co-authored a great book as well called Start Your Family, Inspiration for Having Babies. And the book we're referencing is called Get Married, What Women Can Do to Help It Happen. And we're taking an honest look at what that should look like as we head into this season of the year. And you mentioned, Candace, a couple of women in the Bible. There's another one that you reference as well. In fact, you call it the pulling of Ruth. Let's talk about the story of Ruth and what we can learn from that example.
Well, it's interesting. Ruth teaches us a lot. She was single. She was a widow and a foreigner. She attached herself by covenant to Naomi, her mother-in-law, and went with her back into Jerusalem. And when I first read Ruth, I saw her as an example, a model of girl power. And I said going to the threshing floor and asking Boaz to be her kinsman redeemer was kind of like going to the Starbucks. And I have to say that I think I got it wrong. I've read Ruth so many times, and I've spent so much time praying for wisdom and insight to understand that book. And I've actually rewritten the Pull of Ruth article. I think it's been four times now. So the current article on Downless is good. I think it's orthodox. Ruth wasn't into girl power. Ruth, it turns out, was entirely into submitting to the Lord and trusting in his power in the most undesirable of circumstances. And so here is where I think she has so much to teach young women today. We live in a very undesirable culture when it comes to getting married, when it comes to having structures and family members that are actively helping us build godly marriages. And Ruth was in a really dangerous situation, going to glean in Boaz's field. She didn't know it was going to be his field. And then going to the threshing floor. Both times, she was actually in physical danger, a single woman. And so I think the lesson to glean from Ruth is that no matter how dark the circumstances appear, no matter how bitter even the circumstances feel to you, God is still in the business of making good matches. And he is trustworthy. And he is always good and always for our good, even when it feels like he's not, even when it feels like the heavens are brass and he's not answering our prayers and you know, we feel more like Job. And so the thing that I love, too, about Ruth is that the man that she ended up marrying is a model for what to look for in a man. He was husbanding her, if you will, even before she made any kind of a connection with him as kinsman redeemer. He was giving her food and water. He was blessing her. He was doing the work of finding out who she was, whose woman she was, and where she came from, and knowing her history. And so we see him leading in a godly way early on, and we see her responding in a godly way throughout. And then we see both of them in absolute commitment to sexual purity at the point on that dark threshing floor when they had every reason not to be, certainly from a human perspective. And so that book is just full of wisdom for singles. And I would recommend it's the best resource I've found on it, John Piper's little book, A Sweet and Bitter Providence.
It's
so helpful and so encouraging.
Yeah, it's an excellent little resource as well. Well, it kind of ties in with Linda's question. She called in from Plymouth, and she said, as a woman in my 60s, how do I maintain my morals and values while dating without settling? She's mentioned it's hard to find men that have the same values at her age.
Yeah, that's certainly true. It's hard to find men if by morals and values you mean the standards of Scripture, which are sexes for marriage, that's hard at any age, really. I think there's an increasing temptation and difficulty if you've been married and now you're a widow or, you know, you've had that experience in your past, and so then going back to dating could be even more challenging. The source of strength for that, though, is Christ. You know, it's praying and saying, you told us that we can't do anything apart from you, but you said, abide in me, and through Christ I can do all things. And so that's our source, and every date really should be bathed in prayer, and certainly every person you date should at the start have the same conviction. If you're dating someone who is wishy-washy on this issue, it's going to be really hard to stand against that. And so that's why dating in the context of a church community is so helpful, just to have the accountability of other people in your life who are asking questions and walking with you and even double dating with you to get to know this guy to see if he is a worthy candidate for marriage.
Well, that kind of ties in with Alex's question. Alex is listening in of Faith 90.5 in Duluth with a question about some encouragement to men. Alex, you're on with Candace Waters. Go ahead.
Hi. I think you kind of touched on it earlier, but I'm asking for maybe more encouragement for guys today on kind of leadership, but more emphasis on the protection, like kind of leaving themselves vulnerable to like protect others. Just encouragement for that, because I feel like a lot of guys today have trouble finding their fit in that.
They need to lead, right? Yeah. What would you say, Candace?
I'm not sure I understand the question. You said they're having trouble finding a fit for protecting.
Well, I think they just, I think he's saying, that, you know, how do we encourage men that they sort of take their leadership role as a protector and, caring for a woman?
Yeah, well, I think, again, God gave us marriage and he gave us the church. And the church is where we learn how to walk as believers. And the best way we do that is by hearing the faithful preaching of the word and by seeing it modeled by older men. And so for the younger men, hound the older men. Ask them, can I spend time with you and your family? Can I come to dinner? Can I see just how you live out a normal day and how you relate to your wife and how you relate to your children? So many young men, I think, are limping metaphorically because they grew up in homes where they didn't have a dad. And so they've just never seen it done. And this is where the body of Christ needs to step in and fill that gaping wound, that gaping hole where there are, there haven't been role models for these young guys. And so go to the pastor and say, hey, I need a model. Can you direct me to a man in the church? Help match me up with someone who can show me what it means to be a provider and a protector.
Well, as we referenced earlier, too, it probably is the responsibility of us as older men to give a few of those oughts to some of the younger men in our lives that we know, right?
Definitely. I mean, if the best scenario is that an older guy sees a younger guy and says, hey, come on over on Saturday. I'm going to be working in the garage. I just want you to hang out with me for a couple hours. We'll talk. We'll have a soda. I just want to invest in you. Often it's the other way that the younger people really have to ask the older to do that, because I think the older people can feel intimidated, can feel outmoded, outdated, like, well, what do I have to offer? Or they might think, oh, I lived such a messed up life. How could I possibly be a model? Well, they have some of the most valuable lessons to teach, because they can talk about where they've been and where they've come by God's grace, and hopefully save some young people some of those same heartaches.
You, in the book, you talked a little bit about, some of the people that were in you and Steve's life at the time, and just offered some advice and some encouragement and maybe some direction along the way. Just say a little bit more about what you've experienced personally.
Yeah, the mentoring relationships have been so helpful. In marriage, Steve and I were graduate students together, and we had a professor that we both really loved, and he and his wife ended up meeting with us just a handful of times, but they helped us because we went from being friends to dating, and that was such an awkward transition. And they were there to just have dinner with us and go for a walk, and I could bounce my questions off Mary, and Steve could bounce his questions off Hugh. And they had been there. They had a similar story, and they were just able to share from their experience, and it was so encouraging and reaffirming to hear someone say, oh, that's normal, and look at it from this way, and just to have them pray for us and know they were praying and pray with us. But then later, because of that investment, we really trusted them, and they came back into our lives a year after we had been married and said, hey, when are you going to have kids? And we said, oh, someday we've got loans to pay off, and we want to buy a house, and I had just started a really great job. And Mary looked at me and said, well, how do you know you're still going to be fertile when you decide you're ready? And I was just stunned. I didn't have an answer. Nobody had ever asked me such a bold question before. And so I think it is so wonderful when an older couple is willing to go boldly where angels fear to tread, in brotherly and sisterly affection, in the love of the Lord, to say, hey, let us walk with you in this. And for young parents to have parents with kids who are older than theirs are, to see they're a little further down the road, they've been where I am, they know how hard it is, but they also know how to get through it, that's just vital. And it is biblical. It's the Titus 2 model of the older men teaching the younger men and the older women teaching the younger women. And if you can't find that, I just encourage you to pray and say, Lord, I would love to have mentoring in my life. Would you just show me who to ask? and help me to find at least one older person that I can connect with and ask questions about life.
Candace, you talked about when you and Steve moved from sort of friendship to dating and how awkward that was. I think there's probably a lot of people listening now and say, yeah, there's a lot of awkwardness about this. So let's talk about the DTR, the define the relationship. You had one of those moments with Steve, didn't you?
I did, and I think that's what some people would think of when they hear pulling a Ruth, because that's really, the question. It's going to the threshing floor and saying, will you do this for me? That's what Ruth did of Boaz, and I did that. I really did that in essence with Steve. I said, look, we have this incredible friendship. We have been best friends for almost a year, and I said, I really want to get married today, and I really want to get married someday. I wanted to get married that day, but someday, and I hope it's to you. If that's not where our friendship is headed, then I can't do this anymore. I can't spend all this time with you because everybody thinks we're dating, and I know we're not dating, and no one else will ask me out, and I don't want to waste the best year or two of my life being in that graduate school setting where there were a lot of single available men, Christian men. I don't want to waste this year in a go-nowhere buddy relationship. What is this? And I really was asking him to lead. And I was asking the question that in another day, fathers used to ask on behalf of their daughters. They would say, son, what are your intentions for my daughter? Well, that's the question that women need to have asked on their behalf. And ideally, somebody else will ask it because it's harder to ask it for yourself. And it doesn't set the best precedent to have to be the one to raise the question. But if nobody's asking it and you're just throwing good time after bad, ask the question. It's a very simple question. What does this mean?
As I was reflecting on that, I remembered exactly where I was when my then girlfriend and I had that DTR, and that was it really was a turning point. But those are valuable things to do, aren't they? And even though friendship is a good thing, I mean maybe we just feel like, well, is it really wasting a year? You were, I guess, thinking, Steve, in terms of marriage, he wasn't necessarily for you, though, was he?
Right, not at that point. He would say, if you were on the phone right now, he'd say he knew it was a possibility. He was just dragging his feet, keeping his eye open for who else might enter the picture. And he would say I was being unfair to Candace, putting wear and tear on her heart and not focusing in on what was right in front of him. And I think, again, this goes to God's sovereignty. If you have an eligible candidate right in front of you for marriage, take that as from the Lord and say, Lord, help me to be a good steward of this opportunity and not squander it, keeping my eyes open, wondering if somebody better might come along. Because that, again, is just that consumer mindset that says, I don't want to have buyer's remorse. But that's the wrong mindset to bring to relationship, because we're not talking about buying a house or buying a car. We're talking about a person made in God's image. And we're also talking about not finding someone that meets all of your needs and satisfies all your desires, but you're talking about someone that you can serve and lay your life down for and build a family with and really advance God's glory on the earth with and be fruitful with. I mean, these are so much more infinitely satisfying than trying to find someone who makes you feel good.
Candace Waters, my guest, and she has authored this wonderful resource called Get Married, What Women Can Do to Help It Happen. Candace has served as a Boundless editor for a number of years, and she's a freelance writer and editor, and her and her husband Steve have written a great book called Start Your Family, Inspiration for Having Babies, and we've got some copies of Get Married to give away, and love to have you join the conversation. You can do that with a phone call at 877-933-2484, 877-93-FAITH, or if you'd like to sign up for the book and have it to read over Valentine's Day. I'm not sure what. We'll happily put your name in the drawing. It's 877-933-2484.
And marriage, love, and marriage go together like a horse and carriage. This, I tell you, brother, you can't have one without the other.
We're talking about marriage today and love and commitment and all those things. And referencing a great book called Get Married, What Women Can Do to Help It Happen. And the premise of the book is that it's okay to want to be married, and that Christian women can be encouraged to believe it's possible, and Candace Waters supplies some of the tools to get there despite our post-marriage culture. Got some copies to give away at 877-93-FAITH. Candace, one of the things you talk about in the book is about prayer and how important that is. Say a word about, you know, how maybe women should be praying, and, you know, men too that are looking for a bride. If there doesn't seem to be anything on the horizon, what should they do?
They should be like the persistent widow who kept going to the judge and asking over and over and over. This is how Jesus taught us how to pray. And, you know, when we follow his example and say, give me this day my daily bread, the way God meets that need is by sending other people to bake bread, to sell bread, to buy and cup the bread for us. And I think we know from Genesis that we were made to need a spouse. Men need a helper. Wives, you know, women were made to be wives. Men were made to be husbands. And so it helps so much when you're going to God in prayer to know that you're asking him to give you what he designed you to have, that marriage in his image is a very good gift, and that you can go with boldness and say, Lord, I so long for what you want me to have, for what you designed me for, and I feel such a deep longing for it. And do a couple of things. Ask the Lord to shape your desire for marriage to conform with his vision for what marriage should be. Because realize that so much of what our culture passes off as marriage is really not what God had in mind. And so we want to make sure that our expectations are rooted in the truth of Scripture and in his vision for marriage. So ask him to shape your desires, and then ask him to bless you with a godly Christian marriage, with a home that will be fruitful, that will be a light, that will be a gospel witness. You know, a biblical marriage is a picture to a lost world of Christ and his relationship with the church. And so it's very evangelistic to be in a strong, biblical, godly marriage. It is a light in a community. It's a light on a street. It's a light to your neighbors. It can be a light in the grocery store. I mean, people see you and they recognize something is different, and they ask questions. And so pray with boldness, and then if the Lord doesn't answer your prayer right away, ask him for patience. Ask him to help you trust his timing, because, you know, you're dealing with not just yourself but with another person, and he's working in that person's life too. And so there are so many times where the timeline is different than what you thought it would be or what you had hoped it would be. That was the case for me, but I undoubtedly would say, once I met Steve and once I was married to Steve, I was so thankful the Lord didn't give me all the other men I prayed for. Mm-hmm. All the other guys I thought, oh, he'd be good. I'm so glad the Lord said, no, wait. His timing is perfect, and his ways are best. They just don't always make sense to us. And so if you're in a long season of waiting, ask the Lord not to waste that in your life, but to use it to sanctify you and make it more like Jesus. And to, I love the prayer, but I believe, help my unbelief. Help me to want what you want for me.
How do we guard against making marriage an idol? And, you know, does this just sort of frustrate a lot of singles who maybe, you know, need to be content in singleness?
Right. Well, I think we need to be content wherever we are. Contentment, though, doesn't mean not hoping for something. And again, if you're hoping for a godly marriage, you're hoping for something that God said is good. You know, he who finds a wife finds a good thing and receives favor from the Lord. So it is a good thing to want to get married. The way to avoid, though, that discontent and that really frustration is to make sure that what you're wanting is biblical marriage, and spend time studying what does that look like. Read really good books about marriage from a biblical perspective. But also, don't spend all your time just thinking about marriage. Don't subscribe to the bridal magazines. You know, resist the temptation to get all hooked on shows like The Bachelor or shows about wedding dresses and weddings, and because there's that is not what Christian marriage is about. That's about the pomp and circumstance of a party that has the bride as the centerpiece. And Christian marriage is about a covenant that has Christ at the center. And so it's a very different picture. So make sure that what you're longing for really is biblical marriage, and ask the Lord to shape your desires. But then also spend your time in your waiting serving. Serve the local church. Be involved in the body that God has called you to. Invest in the young children and you know, for the guys, invest in the teenage boys who need role models, and serve the widows, mow their lawns, And there's just so many areas where we can be pouring ourselves out for others, and that is the best way you can practice for the day-in and day-out realities of married life is by serving. The worst thing you can do is spend that single season getting really good at being single by just focusing on your own needs and not being accountable to anyone. The best thing to do is to pour yourself out, to make yourself accountable to others, to share your finances and schedule with, you know, your small group leaders or your pastor, to have someone in your life, because that's what marriage is. And so that's how you're being a faithful disciple, but you're also building muscles that will help you if God gives you the gift of marriage. And if he doesn't, you have been building the kingdom. So it's not at all wasted. It's a wonderful way to spend yourself during the single season.
One of the words that we use a lot these days is network. And in essence, that's really kind of what, you know, we're expanding God's kingdom, but we're also, through his church, we're being in places where we have the opportunity to meet people, right?
Yeah, and if you're serving, you know, if you're mowing the widow's lawn, she might have a beautiful granddaughter, you know. and it's okay to let the older people in your lives and the pastoral staff at your church know, hey, I'm hoping to get married, and I'm open to suggestions. I think it's really valuable. We do that when we're looking for a job. We do that when we want to go to a prestigious school. You know, we think, who do I know that is on the board there, or who is an alum, and who can write a letter for me? And I think we should bring all of our creative energies to bear on this most important of searches.
I suppose some would say, well, you know, if I'm telling everybody I'm looking, then it makes me seem anxious or needy.
Right, or it makes you seem like a failure because you're not dating yet. That's how I felt. I was afraid to mention it because I thought if I said I want to get married and they see I'm not dating, they'll say, well, clearly something's wrong with you. I think, of course, we have to, again, not obsess about something. It's not the thing you want to mention every single time you're with somebody in every conversation. But if every time someone asks you what you hope to do with your life, all you ever talk about is related to your job, they will think that's all you care about. They won't know that you want to get married. I have had really attractive, smart, accomplished single friends who, when it leaks out that they actually want to be married and they want to be a stay-at-home mom, people say, really? I thought she just was so into her job. Well, because that's the message that they projected when they answered those questions. So I think you should be strategic. You say, you know, I love where I'm at, and the Lord has blessed me, and I want to be faithful and be a good steward of what he's given me today, but my heart's desire is to be a wife and a mom. And it's okay for you to say that, and it's good for the people in your life to know that, because then they can be on the lookout for you and help you in that process.
Got about 3 minutes or so left. In the appendix of your book, you do some commonly asked questions. Is there one or two that maybe you hear most often or maybe we haven't addressed yet today?
What should I do on Valentine's Day? I'm single and I'm lonely. And I would say, don't sit around hoping someone will send you a Valentine. Get busy. There's still time. Go out and buy some Valentines and send them to people you love. And don't let holidays like this make you feel left out. And don't do what I did in college and eat the entire box of chocolate that your dad sends to you. Take your energy and your love that you feel like you're not being able to give to a man and give it to people in your life that the Lord has already placed there who are so needy, and pour yourself out for others and be amazed at what the Lord does to fill your heart. That would just be my strongest encouragement as we come up to what for so many is a painful holiday. I used to call it Black Death Day. I hated Valentine's Day because I didn't have a boyfriend. And thanks be to God, he showed me that I could use the energy I thought could only go towards a boyfriend to bless my family members, to bless my siblings, to reach out to my roommates and other people in my life before I met Steve, so that I actually started obeying him before I had a boyfriend. It made it sweeter when I did have a boyfriend.
You were, because you were in graduate school when you met, right? So that was later than you had intended to get married, right?
Yes, I thought I would leave college engaged, and I didn't meet Steve until I was 25. Okay. So my timeline was different than the Lord's, but his ways are higher than mine. I'm very thankful that he overrode my desires.
Well, and you've written another great book, you and Steve together, which is equally important. It's called Start Your Family, Inspiration for Having Babies, and I recommend that as well. And Candace, if people want to kind of follow some of your writing, what's the best way to connect with you?
Boundless.org. I do an every other week advice column for women, and I'm always looking for new questions. So that if you have a question, just get on Boundless.org and click the advice tab and send away. Send me your questions.
Good. Candace Waters, who's a writer and editor and writes for Boundless.org. You can check it out online, Boundless.org, and recommend the book as well. It's a great resource called Get Married, What Women Can Do to Help It Happen. It's published from Moody. And she's also, her and Steve have written Start Your Family, Inspiration for Having Babies. Great resource there as well. Candace, good to connect with you, and enjoy Valentine's Day with your husband, Steve, and the kids.
Thanks, Neil. I sure appreciate being with you today. It was great.
If you missed part of today's program or would like to pass it on to a friend, our podcasts are shareable. You can go to our website. It's myfaithradio.com. Click on the Connecting Faith show page, and you can get the archive for all the latest and greatest shows here on Connecting Faith.